Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger. For the ones who get it done.
So many sports are in full swing right now, so there's no better time to get into sports betting than this very second. Go to Bet Online. It's the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Bet Online has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Head to the website betonline.ag or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet Online, your online sportsbooks experts.
And welcome everybody into a brand new episode of the Believe in Clippers podcast. Jesse Cass and Alex Acker back with you here for a new episode as we are into the playoffs. Clippers getting ready for game two after a tough game one loss. Alex, it's been a little while since we've chatted. We've had some special guests on in the past few weeks, but happy to have you back and ready for the continuation of the playoffs here for the Clips.
For sure. I'm happy to be back, man. It's been a long time since we linked up and got this thing going, man. So I'm excited to see what the Clippers got to go, for game two.
Yeah, no question. I mean, we'll start, obviously, with game one. Last week when we had Eric Pincus on, he kind of talked us through some of his thoughts in the playoffs and the matchup. Of course, Clippers saw Dallas a year ago, ended up winning that series in six. Team's a little bit different this year with some of the personnel changes, but in general, the key pieces are the same. What'd you see in game one? It was a close game. Clippers got off to a slow start. They came back. They didn't necessarily play their best basketball. They shot pretty poorly, just 11 of 40 from three-point range, which we know they've been so good from three this year, didn't make the plays down the stretch. What did you see in game one from the Clippers and the Mavs in that first game?
Oh, man, just going back to it, it seemed like they played a mirror in a way, They live by the jumper, both teams do, So whoever pretty much is going to run them off that three-point line is going to win. Dallas is a prone advocate for that three-point line, and they got some key guys that actually knock it down. You can't double off of Doncic at all. They'll make you pay, So I think that was the biggest thing that they need to understand and lock in to taking advantage of the game for sure. But, they just need to actually just go straight at them and not shy away from them, for real. Getting to their spots. I'm seeing in the fourth quarter, third quarter, they're hitting their 15-footers. Everything's clicking. But just like you said in the beginning, though, I think they just came from a slow start, and it kind of, like, welled on them trying to get back into the groove of things and getting that lead.
Yeah, and one thing, obviously, we look at the star players, of course, and their performances, and, you mentioned the slow start. I think – it was a little bit worrisome. Paul George started slow, but he ended up actually having a really good second half and kind of quelling some of those nerves. Kawhi, of course, did his usual stuff as well. And you look at that on the other side with Dallas. Luka Doncic, of course, was great. He got a little quiet in the fourth quarter when the Clippers doubled him, but 30-point triple-double was big. It's a lot of those role players for both teams where, throughout the season, we've seen Marcus Morris be so reliable. He was quiet, 0 of 6 from three-point range. Reggie Jackson had a really poor outing, not shooting the ball well either. And then on Dallas's side, 4 of 5 from three-point range for Dorian Finney-Smith, 5 threes for Hardaway, and off the bench, Jalen Brunson, 15 points. He got to the free throw line 8 times. So, a lot of the times we talk about the stars, but especially in the playoffs, the supporting pieces can be big, and While the Clippers did have some supporting players play well, we mentioned those guys from Dallas. They were big in that game, allowing them to come away with that game one win.
For sure, for sure. And some key players that we thought that were going to be able to actually contribute, Cousins and Mann, who's been playing phenomenal all the way up until this point, didn't get no take, no shine at all, you know. So I don't know if they was reserving them or if they're injured or not. Maybe you know. But they're definitely needed for this type of energy that they give out, for sure. And a big presence down low in the paint to play that bully ball that Cousins does so well.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, playoffs, we always see rotations shorten. I think right now, you know, 8-9 guys is what we'll see. You know, I think Terrence Mann, of course, can be that shot of energy if the Clippers feel like that's something that they need. And I think Cousins will be, you know, a situational type thing. Maybe if they need, like you said, that kind of post presence in a few minutes off the bench. But with the return of Serge Ibaka, who actually looked good as well. You know, he's working his way back after missing a couple of months. But I think Serge has been good. And that's an interesting subplot, too, of, you know, just kind of what matchup works best for the Clippers here, where we know in general Zubats has been so effective for the team. They can go small, which we saw with Morris and Batum kind of playing the bigger roles, and then, of course, Ibaka off the bench as well, along with Cousins. So, you know, what do you see in terms of adjustments? Game two for the Clippers, the obvious one, the easy one, which is not really an adjustment, is shoot the ball better. They miss a lot of open shots. That'll certainly, you know get rid of and alleviate a lot of problems. But what else can they do to get themselves going in game two?
I think what you said in the beginning is the fourth quarter where they kind of got the balls out of Doncic's hand a little bit more and double teaming him and trying to figure out other matchups where people can be taken advantage of and positions where they're not comfortable at, you know. It's highly unlikely they're going to shoot the ball like that again. Who knows? Dallas is prone for actually doing that at a high level. They got a crazy clip outside. So we just got to play this numbers game. You can't take away everything, but you got to take away something, and you got to be good at that, you know. So they have to figure out what they can be good at taking away and use that to their advantage. They got this game underneath their belt. I'm sure they're watching film back and forth to see what they can do and what they've done in each quarter and using that to their advantage for sure. But I think another key point is just playing. You know, we got Cantor, who hasn't played at all, and man, you know, I'm a firm believer of these guys playing with that tenacity of just proving themselves and wanting to prove themselves in this situation like this, for sure. So, you know, second game, you've got to be a point of something like that of interest.
Yeah, and the subplot with Mann is interesting, too, because, you know, playoffs, obviously Clippers such a deep team. He's a young player. You understand why, you know, Reggie Jackson, we've talked about, has played so well this year. But it might have to be one of those quick, tough decision things for Tyronn Lue, where we know if Jackson's not making his shots like we saw in game one, then he's kind of a liability on defense, whereas that's not the case with Terrence Mann. So if that move has to be made, that's available to them. But I think this is, you know, we see so much, and obviously, you know, there's no sugarcoating. It's disappointing to lose game one at home. But yeah. I think, you know, we're so prone, especially in the sports landscape that we have now with social media, that the overreactions to game one. And, you know, last year, granted, it was the bubble, but we saw the Lakers lose game one at home, or game one as the home team, and then go on to win four straight. And, of course, the title the year before that, Toronto lost game one at home. They, of course, went on to win the title. So it's not, you know, a panic button thing. But this is a very important game two now for the Clippers, where it's about as close to a must win as you can get. Don't want to go down, of course, 0-2 on your home floor. So, you don't want to panic, of course, but you still need that incredible sense of urgency. And I think we'll see it. We've seen, especially under Tyronn Lue this year, the Clippers have bounced back really well after losses. I believe they only had one three-game losing streak during the entire year. Pretty much any time they had a loss, they were ready to bounce back. So, you know, that should bode well for game two coming up tonight.
Yeah, I truly think so, for sure. To be honest with you, I feel more confident actually watching this team struggle to, you know, at what they're doing now than what they did last year. You know, I was a little bit more worried last year of them, you know, getting to this far and actually struggling. But now I think that they have the right pieces as far as the coaching staff, as far as, you know, the key pieces and the small pieces to getting things done where they can actually change and not just rely on talent and athleticism, what they did last year, and thinking that was going to be just it. You know, so they're going to actually put together a game plan and they're going to deliver for sure. This is not going to be, you know, the downside for the Clippers. I don't think so, by no chance.
Yeah, and I agree. I think we've talked about it throughout the year on this podcast that I think the construction of this roster is a little better than last year and a little more tailored to the playoffs and that type of game. So I think that should play itself out and hopefully does in game two for the Clippers coming up. But you know, they're, you know, as we said, at a certain point, sometimes it's just about making shots. And there's obviously adjustments the Clippers can make defensively and how they want to attack Doncic. He's going to get numbers regardless, but, you know, taking some of those other guys out maybe a little more will be helpful for them. And then we saw a few, you know, uncharacteristic things from the Clippers. They're statistically the best free throw shooting team of all time. They missed 4 free throws in the fourth quarter in a close game. That, of course, always comes back to bite you. So I don't know if we'll see that again, but, you know, things that, as we said, not insurmountable mistakes that they need to make up, just little things here and there. And, you know, we should see the team that we expect coming up in game two.
For sure. One thing I definitely got to say, too, is, you know, Morris is he's a great defensive player. But if you're playing somebody that's 6'8", like Doncic, you know what I mean, that can do it all from the outside and the inside as well, too, it takes a toll on you and your game as far as the other end, as far as offense, you know. And it shows for sure, you know, going 0-6. He's probably a little tired and fatigued actually picking up and guarding the dude, you know, the bulk of the time. So that's the thing where we definitely got to figure out what we need more out of Morris, either his defense or offense, because we can't have him playing Luka Doncic then expecting him to, you know, deliver as much as we need him on the offensive end as well, too, knocking down key shots that he normally hits throughout the season.
Yeah, and I think, honestly, it's got to be a by-committee type of thing, right? We know that's one of the strengths of this Clippers team. As you said, someone as amazing and as talented as Doncic, you're not going to shut him down. You're just going to try to make it as difficult as possible. But, you know, that was one of the questions for Ty Lue when referencing Kawhi Leonard and, you know, why isn't he guarding Doncic more? And in theory, that's nice. And I think we'll see him on Doncic as much as possible. But, you know, the game isn't that simple either. We see every time Doncic has the ball, he's getting a ball screen and switching defenders. So if you have, you know, Kawhi starting on him, he's going to do whatever he can to switch the matchup. So, you know, I think we'll see Morris. I think we'll see Leonard. I think we'll see Paul George. We'll see Batum. You know, down the line, as many guys as you can throw at this, and it's more so, are you going to double team him? Are you going to blitz him? Are you going to come out with a hard hedge and get back? I think those are the things more so rather than, you know, which individual defender. I think it's got to be a collective effort from all of these guys for the Clippers in trying to throw, you know, all hands on deck towards Luka.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And I mean, like, Luka's a smart guy. He's not going to force it if he doesn't have to. He's looking over the top for Porzingis, you know, for the small drop pass, and he's delivering. It's hard to guard a 6'8 playing pick and roll with a 7'1" person. You know what I mean? That could put it on the floor as well too. So it's kind of stuck in a sharp water, you know, trying to figure that out. So yeah, that's going to be not an easy task, like you said, for sure.
Yeah, and I think one point you made very early on when we were first starting talking on this podcast was really making a concerted effort to run these three-point shooters off the line and make them make plays where instead of catch-and-shoot opportunities, you know, I know it's a scramble when you're coming back off double teams or hedges or whatever it is, but really got to get out and even if you're selling out, have to run these guys off the line and make guys like Dorian Finney-Smith and Tim Hardaway and Porzingis prove that they can put it on the floor and make a play rather than be catch and shoot guys getting, you know, in their comfort zone and shooting threes that way. So I think we'll see more of that. And I think that'll be a big key in kind of maybe shifting the tide, making those role players a little more uncomfortable and doing things that they're not, you know, as adept at doing.
No, that's true. That's true.
Yeah.
Game two today though, baby.
Yeah. Game two. I think, as I said, I'm hopeful and I think pretty confident that we'll see a stronger effort from the Clippers. I don't think they played terribly. I thought they didn't shoot it, as we said, as well in game one. But in terms of their defensive effort and intensity, you know, if you really throw out that kind of slow start, if it's nerves, if it's overexcitement, whatever it was, I thought that they ended up, you know, playing a pretty strong game in game one with not their best shooting effort. So I think if we see the shooting kind of come back, at least to regress to the mean, come back to the average a little bit, that'll help them significantly. And, you know, maybe some of those butterflies and nerves are gone for the Clippers and they can just play free. You know, I think most people would agree, and we talked about it with Eric Pincus last week, we've heard it all from pretty much any analyst, I think everyone would agree the Clippers are the more talented team in this matchup. Of course, Luka is one of the best players in the league, but outside of that, up and down the roster, I think the Clippers are the better team. So, you know, I think they come out with that focus. And as much as, you know, we talk about the role players as well, maybe just a little bit more from your two stars. We've seen, you know, throughout the first couple games of the playoffs, up and down the playoffs, you know, huge efforts from guys like Jokic and Lillard, where they're putting up 30 plus. You know, you might need that from one of your two guys in Kawhi Leonard and Paul George. You know, they had 26 and 23 in game one. Not bad by any means, but in terms of that superstar level, we saw it from Kawhi last year against Dallas. Yeah. You know, he might need to average 33 points rather than 26. So I think, you know, while you do want to play within the team structure, you got to be a little selfish sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, it's the perfect time to be a little bit unselfish. I mean, a little bit selfish right now, you know, and as far as the playoffs, he's a proven veteran that's been there, and he has to do whatever it takes to get there. So the guys understand, you know, and you want to put that ball in his hands as much as possible, him getting to that free throw line, putting other guys in jeopardy as far as getting fouled. And, yeah, because like you say, you don't tend to play as many people as you can during the playoff run, you know, but if you're getting these guys in foul trouble early, it's definitely going to be a great, sweet situation where you can actually take advantage of somebody new and fresh that got the jitters, you know what I mean? Just want to come in and just, who knows what they're trying to do, you know, play for themselves or something like that. So it's going to be an interesting situation where guys need to really lock in and figure out how to win their own personal individual matchup from that standpoint.
Yeah, and what'd you see from Paul George? We know there's so much pressure and scrutiny on him. You know, he got off to a rough start in terms of missing a couple shots pretty badly to begin the game, started 1 of 7. He ended 8 of 18, so he got hot. He had 23 points, had some big shots in the fourth quarter. What was just your overall impression of his game in game one and what you expect from him going forward?
Man, I was just really shocked the way he actually finished the game. You know what I mean? For me personally, playoff P is definitely here, and he's going to make himself known this year. I can put a stamp on that for sure. I just see that tenacity inside him right now that he really has it all. Every single piece that he's wanted to actually complete a team as far as the point guard standpoint to playing with one of the elite players, the top five next to him, where there's no more hiccups as far as injuries or setbacks like that, you know, so nobody has any setbacks. And I think he's going to be able to actually show that playoff P is available, man, for this game right now. So, yeah, he's got a lot of weight on his shoulders, but he's definitely the man to actually carry it out for sure. He's going to be ready next game.
Yeah, one thing that, you know, impressed me from the game one performance for Paul George, you mentioned, just, you know, you could tell the beginning of the game obviously was not a good start for him, missing some shots pretty badly. But even when before the shots started falling, you saw his effort defensively in particular, where he was really, you know, busting his ass defensively, drawing charges. You know, he's obviously guarding Doncic a lot. He's switching. He's all over the court defensively. So I think that's something that gets overlooked. He was phenomenal on that end of the floor. And then, you know, something to go with going forward, which we saw a little bit. You know, no one on Dallas can really stay in front of him. So we know he doesn't always get the calls going to the basket, but I think him being aggressive, getting in the lane, whether it's finishing or creating for others, he's got to be in that attack mode. I think he will be, but that seemed to be something that worked a lot for the Clippers when, you know, Paul George, whether it was off a screen or off a couple of swing passes, his ability to quickly just go and create off the dribble, Dallas defenders had a hard time staying in front of him. So I think that's something that the Clippers can really key in on And that should hopefully also unlock, you know, some of their outside shooting that has been so good throughout the regular season.
Mm-hmm. No, that's it. That's definitely it for sure. You got to actually be able to just let it all on the table, man, for sure.
Yeah. And what do you see from playoff Rondo? You know, Rajon Rondo, of course, it was the big acquisition midseason for the Clippers. He's been pretty great for them, even through the regular season. Yeah. He came in, you know, 24 minutes, 11 points, 4 boards, 4 assists. He was playing pretty much the bulk of the minutes in crunch time. What did you see from Rondo in his first Clippers playoff game?
Nah, he definitely was Rajon Rondo, playoff Rondo as well, too, man. You said it, I think the third or fourth podcast before this one, where he was like, Rondo is definitely needed, and we're waiting to see that side of Rondo. That's what we got him for playoffs. So Rondo's definitely going to deliver anytime he steps on that floor as far as playoff matchups. And he's not missing a beat for sure. I just think that he needs to get off the ball a little bit more and just start being more assertive, kicking that ball up a little bit more. And then, you know, using that pick and roll, being more aggressive and getting to the hole, man. I think that's the biggest thing, too, for him. But Rondo's just an elite player, man, just a smart, savvy guy. I put him up there as far as Chris Pauls and all those guys that actually just think the game rather than just plan it, you know. So he's going to be able to actually just orchestrate the game where these guys can take a little bit, you know, breath off, like we said in the past, as far as Paul George and Kawhi Leonard bringing the ball up every single night, you know, exerting so much energy. So we're waiting for him to actually just take over and dominate. Once he gets close to a game where he can, he's definitely going to do it for sure.
Yeah, and one thing we saw last year with the Lakers, and really, you know, through this kind of back end of Rondo's career, wherever he's been, you know, there's that stigma, of course. He's still not a great three-point shooter, but compared to what he was when he was younger, where it's, oh, you can lay, you know, 5-6 feet off him and just dare him to shoot. You know, he made three three-pointers in that last game. He was 3 of 4 from downtown. You know, he's certainly become, on top of everything else with all the smarts, someone who's capable from outside enough to have that defense respect him, and then hopefully, like you said, can use that and utilize that to then go into his strengths where he's attacking off the dribble and creating where the defense has to respect the shot. So I think, you know, we'll see more of that as well. But I certainly was not mad that Rondo was the point guard who was in there down the stretch, despite Beverly playing pretty well. We mentioned Jackson struggled, but, you know, this is what they got him for. You know, Rondo has that experience. He's the guy who, especially late, has to be the one to kind of orchestrate things offensively and even defensively. So, you know, while he's coming off the bench, you know, I wouldn't be shocked if we see Rondo in crunch time for a large majority of these games going forward.
Yeah, there shouldn't be no question about that at all. And to talk about what you said as far as his three-point, I remember when, you know, every shot he would shoot would be down, like, damn, that's a bad shot. But now it's not even a surprise that he's hitting shots, because we're expecting him to actually knock it down, you know. And that's the great thing about his transition as far as him being a veteran and a seasoned veteran that he is now, for sure. He's elevated his game a lot as far as outside that arc.
Yeah, and it's hard to really gauge it because it's something new, of course, with, you know, coming, you know, we're still, of course, in the pandemic, but kind of seeing things ease up, more fans into the building with vaccinations up. You know, the Clippers crowd has been, I believe it's at 7,000 right now. So about, you know, a third full, but still pretty noisy and helpful and boisterous. You know, going into Dallas, they're going to be about double that, 15,000 in the crowd. You know, just for players that have seen pretty sparse or minimal crowds this year, do you think that affects them at all going into crazy environments like we've seen, you know, in New York this past weekend with a near full house and just kind of readjusting themselves to being back in front of not only fans, but playoff crowds where the fans are really on it and intense throughout the game?
No, for sure. It's definitely going to be something. I remember they had the echo of the audience in the stands, but nobody in there, you know, at one point. So, but I really think that you really don't even see the crowd, no matter what, when you're playing the game. But it'll be more fun and exciting to actually see these guys with the crowd involved and stuff like that, and getting that energy. And who knows, man? You know, somebody might say something in the stands and spark an interest of Paul George, and he'll ignite and go off for like 15 straight buckets, which he can't do, you know? So we definitely need the crowd to edge him on. And Kawhi Leonard, of anybody, you know, from that Clippers standpoint. So I'm excited that we're actually here, to be honest with you, back. As little window that we have, but, you know, the fans are actually, you know, helpful for this game. We miss the fans, you know, for sure, the hands-on with them.
Yeah, I mean, it makes such a difference in just the excitement and the feel of everything to have the crowds back, and obviously, especially in time for the playoffs, it's pretty awesome. You know, we mentioned how important, of course, this game two upcoming is, but just in general for the series, I just want to get your thoughts on what's the best way to go about it for the Clippers. We've kind of heard differing philosophies where we saw games last year too, where Luka, you know, scored 40 something and the Clippers won. Do you play him one-on-one and kind of let him get whatever numbers he gets and try to take out the other guys? Or do you double team him and let the other guys potentially beat you? Or do you play it somewhere in the middle? What's your philosophy on handling a star like that and kind of howing to defend it in the best way?
Man, I think I'm glad I'm not a coach as far as right now, because it would be a tough situation. I've seen them put in, you know, Pat Beverly, and he's going to the post. Something that you know, that he's comfortable at. You know, he's comfortable playing with little guards in front of him. And, man, he's just a smart individual, you know, at a young age right now. And he's taking advantage of every aspect that he possibly can. And he has the team that's actually giving him the tools to actually do that. So it's going to be hard to play against somebody that has – free range and unlimited range at the same time, you know. So he's a threat no matter where he's at on that court. And boxing one, a zone or whatever you put at him, he's going to capitalize, you know. So you just got to really just hope and be mindful that, you know, he comes in and seeing how he is in the warm-ups. If he's making 10 or 12 threes in a row, you got to be mindful for it, you know. He's one of those special guys like Curry as well too. You know, he's just a gifted talent, you know, a knack for a bucket. But to be honest with you, to order to play him, man, you really got to get the ball out of his hands. Soon as we score, you got to be able to pick him up, you know, and allow him not to get any second touches. If he passes that ball, somebody got to be on him like peanut butter and jelly, like seriously, not having them getting a second chance to actually see that ball at all. And maybe that can be my advantage for sure. Just starting off right there, you know, and seeing how that works. And it's going to be different ways of actually guarding this guy and just putting different people on him. But I can't honestly say, from a man getting a triple-double in the playoff game, it's kind of hard to see what he's going to do next, you know, the next game. So just, you know, strap that seatbelt on and just see what he got.
Yeah, I don't think there's any one right answer. As we said, you know, he's going to get numbers regardless. But I think, you know, we alluded to a few of the things that could potentially be helpful, or at least part of the strategy. I think we talked about, of course, running the other guys off the three-point line and making them make plays. And I don't mind the Clippers switching a lot of these pick and rolls. As you said, they have a lot of really versatile defenders. And even though I think Zubats does as good a job as you can as a big man, I think that might be one small adjustment. We saw, you know, a number of times in the first half where, you know, Zu got switched out onto Doncic, was kind of left on an island. You know, he, as you said, he still does as good as you can for a big man in guarding on the perimeter. But, you know, I think unless it's a wing player, I don't know if I would switch that. I would maybe show, you know, have a hard show from Zubats and get back and rotate and recover, where you're not leaving your, you know, your big man guarding one of the best, you know, perimeter players in the game. So I think, you know, that might be something there where it allows you to play Zubats a little bit more and enjoy some of the good things he does in terms of his defense, his rebounding, his interior presence, and not have him kind of taken off the floor like we saw in game one.
Smart. No, that's smart for sure. most of the time I see Donnie's actually going left for that side step back, which he loves on that left side, you know. So maybe forcing him right a little bit more, and knowing that, you know, right-handed shooters love to go left to get their shots off. It can be a trigger, you know, that can be helpful for sure. So just keeping him close as possible, forcing him right, and keeping a hand in his face at the same time, and not going for any step backs, and having him just actually just get to the hole. But he's so crafty, which is crazy because he goes at his own pace. You can't speed him up at all. You know, as much as you want to try to put in much pressure on him, he uses his weapons as far as his shoulders and hips very well in order to get that defender off him to make those shots look easy as possible. And he has counters, you know. You would think you got him at one particular spot when he picks the ball up and he's spinning off, or he's reverse spinning and he's fading from that standpoint or different angles, you know, and he's making high arch. Luka Doncic shots looking like Dirk Nowitzki, you know. So it's kind of crazy to see this guy actually do these things at a young age, but he has it for sure.
Yeah, so we'll see what ends up happening in Game 2 upcoming. It's a 7:30 p.m. Tuesday night game for the Clippers at home, trying to even the series up at 1-1. Of course, Dallas trying to take a commanding lead. Any thoughts or predictions for Game 2 going forward for tonight?
Nah, let's just get it, man. I'm hyped. I want the Clippers to win, so I'm all Clippered out right now.
That will be the hope, as we said. Yeah, that's the hope for the Clippers. See if they can draw even and send this thing back to Dallas 1-1. Alex, good catching up and chopping it up with you. And we'll be full force going forward in the playoff series here, as we said, hopefully for what is hopefully a long run for the Clippers. We'll see if they can draw back even tonight.
Let's go.
So that's it for this week's edition of the Believe in Clippers podcast. Big thanks to my co-host, Alex Acker. So we're back here in full force, as we mentioned, Clippers game 2. Tonight, if you're listening on Tuesday, 7:30 p.m., Clippers at home. And then the series shifts to Dallas. Another, again, 2 days off in between. So game 3 will be Friday, game 4 on Sunday. But of course, one game at a time, and focus on the task at hand. Clippers with a vital game at home to try to draw even. We will have all the reaction and analysis from that after this game too on Tuesday night. So thanks so much for tuning in here on the Believe Podcast Network. Know if you enjoy the show, please rate, review, and subscribe on Apple. And we're also available wherever else you get your podcasts, and of course at Believe.com. So with all of that said, thank you so much for tuning in to this episode presented by Bet Online on the Believe Podcast Network, LA's number one sports podcast network, and the only place for the show for every team in LA and more. We believe in our LA teams. Do you believe? Go Clips.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.